What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Little angst, little anxiety in the real estate markets across this country these days. Mortgage rates seem to be creeping up. Shifts in expectations based on what the Federal Reserve is talking about, it pushed rates back towards 7%, a level that hasn't been reached since December. And Alex Elizage over at United Wholesale Mortgage says, when you start to cross whole numbers, psychologically, people get a little nervous, adding to that angst and anxiety. And here to talk to us about it, Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst, visited a real estate conference here recently with big brokers from around the country. And Arthur, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Newell. Glad to be back.
Arthur, fair comments about the industry right now?
Oh, yeah, more than fair. You could probably spend about a six-hour radio program on what's going to happen next. So it's still very much an issue that's in flux. Even though there was a settlement with the NAR, the National Association of Realtors, and some plaintiffs in Missouri, the Department of Justice recently was able to have a court ruling in their favor. Previously, they had reached a settlement with NAR, and NAR was trying to say that, hey, you know, we reached a settlement. You can't come after us over these issues anymore. Well, the DOJ went to an appellate court, and the appellate court says, well, yes, they can. So now the DOJ is in a very, very prominent position to weigh in on this proposed settlement, which the judge still has to approve, which will probably happen in May. So it's pretty clear in my mind the DOJ is pretty much hell-bent to get the commission rates crushed down dramatically. Whether that will stand the test of the marketplace, that's a different question. But certainly they are very, very much pushing towards a model where the commission rates come down. And, you know, in today's world, you know, I'm a realtor, but it does make some sense. As a very rough example, right now, you know, if you go into the multiple listing service, you know, the commission to the selling broker that the listing broker is offering is posted for the selling broker to see. But the buyer doesn't see that. And if the buyer did see that, you know, the DOJ is saying that, hey, they might have a different commission structure. Maybe not as high if the buyer had to pay their own commission and seller wasn't allowed to offer a commission to the buyer's broker. Right now, the seller is legally allowed to reimburse the buyer for their buyer broker fee. That can be financed as long as the seller is paying for it as part of a seller concession, just like paying for a roof repair or some termite certificate or something like that. That's normal. That's expected. Up to a limit. Obviously, they're not going to say, hey, on his $200,000 house, we're going to let the seller, you know, finance $300,000 and sell a concession.
Right.
It has to appraise. It has to be realistic. And that's where the devil's in the details. There's another group in town this weekend, believe it or not, besides the large brokers, ARELA, the Association of Real Estate Law Officials. And that's basically the governing bodies of real estate commissions across the country. So they have an annual conference, a mid-year conference, and they happen to have it in New Orleans now. It's ongoing. I believe today's the last day. And that is one of the top topics of the real estate license law officials is, what do we do? How do we change our rules, regulations, our agency laws in all of our states? So the whole industry is in flux. The Louisiana Realtors Association is having meetings and town halls to try to discuss where the current situations are. No one has a clear field of vision, though. Different brokers now are clearly trying different business models in different markets to see if they can compete in the market and still remain in business. So because their infrastructure is very significant in these brokerage operations, they're not inexpensive to operate. So we'll have to see. But right now it appears that some brokers are having some real head scratching.
I got to imagine that this means consolidation, right? Anytime that you have infrastructure costs like that, you need to spread those costs across more consumers, more agents. We just recently learned that Latter & Blum sold out to Compass, is it? My memory
Compass,
serves me correct.
Yeah.
Out of New York. You know, big company. Latter & Blum, iconic real estate agency here. Been around since I think I've been a kid. You know, and I guess
it's interesting because Compass is a public company, but one of its biggest holders is a Saudi company. So there are some entities that would like to get into the U.S. housing market, and are putting some pretty big steps to get that accomplished. So you know, we've got China trying to get our farmland. We've got other foreign entities trying to get in the housing market. But these new commission rates that will probably come into effect in the next 24 months, I think it's going to take about 2 years for things to shake out before people really figure out, you know, where the level is, what's going to work in the marketplace. You know, in England, as an example, and we talked a little bit about it last time, Bill, but in England, the commission rates range from about 1.25% all the way up to 3%. But you have to remember there, buyers get no representation whatsoever in that. You're on your own. So when you go to that estate broker is only representing the seller. There is zero representation for the buyer. Absolutely. And if you want representation on the selling side, you have to pay separately outside of the transaction. That's significant.
On the buyer side, you mean? On the buyer
Correct.
Side.
Exactly. Yeah. So when they hear, oh, they only pay, you know, 3% commission in England. Well, that's true, but not really the full picture because the representation is missing on the buyer side. One of the things that's happened in our market over the last several years have been these property disclosure forms that have been promulgated by the Louisiana Real Estate Commission on residential properties. And that has really, really exposed deficiencies in properties and really given the buyers more insight into the condition of the property than they ever had before, where they were kind of naked. I don't know. You know, is it okay? Is it not okay? I don't know. And they also have home inspectors now that do a pretty good job of identifying problems. So, you know, we're kind of off an old commission model where in the old days that didn't really exist. You know, property inspections and property disclosures 15, 20 years ago were almost unheard of. Now they're just in the norm. And added to that, the technology that allows agents to do so many more transactions than they ever did before. So we're going to see some pretty big changes, I believe.
Do you think it'll end up like, let's look at the English model, ends up closer to that, and then buyers hire third parties on a fee-for-service. So, you know, if you want them to evaluate property disclosure, it could be $200. If you wanted them to evaluate more, you know, there'd be a cost for each individualized service that they would be providing you.
I think that's probably one of the business models that's going to come up for sure. You know, I think real estate commissions are going to have to further define the lines of what's real estate brokerage activities and what are consulting activities. There's gray there. There's gray. And at what point do you have to be licensed to give consulting advice to a buyer on maybe legal language in a contract or construction advice or things like that? So, as I say, it's pretty muddy right now. The system was pretty well defined. Everyone knew their roles. They knew where things were. This is kind of just upsetting the apple cart and all the apples all over the ground. We don't know where to pick them up and put them anymore. So we've got to find new baskets to put these apples in.
Arthur, separate and apart from that issue, obviously there is a lot of angst and anxiety about rates, higher mortgage rates going, you know, headed north now, uncertainty as to where the Fed is going to be. They were talking about when interest rate cuts would occur. Now the language is more falling on the side of if they occurred. And I was reading a Wall Street Journal article earlier this morning that was posted today, and Bill Brewer, who's a principal broker at Remax Equity Group, is quoted as saying, "This is the worst market I've seen." He said, "We don't have the tools that got us out of tight spots in the past." And I talked about this in the intro last hour leading up to you coming on. You know, it used to be we would just tweak the underwriting criteria of these loans, make it more favorable and expand who would actually qualify. You had a huge non-conforming loan portfolio across this country. Those things have kind of gone by the wayside, right?
That's right. The unknown factors for lenders, specifically more so in our market than and in any area that's really prone to insurance problems. I was talking to a broker in Rhode Island, and he was scratching his head going, "Man, our insurance is going through the roof." I said, "What are you guys doing down there with the hurricanes? You guys are killing us up here." You know, the rates have felt all over the country. So
yeah, blame it on us again.
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry.
Forget about Hurricane Sandy right there in your backyard. That they're still paying claims.
Right. Well, I'll turn off our ceiling fans down here, and it'll all go away. I mean, obviously, you know, it's an issue. There was the UNO just had an economic forum, I think, the other day, and it was really interesting that in the office market, for example, the insurance used to be about 1% of the, you know, value. Typically, you could figure as the premium. Now they're talking as high as 5%. I mean, that changes the economics of underwriting in office buildings like unbelievable. And you can't pass that to the tenants. So what does that do to the value of the real estate? Well, it's got to come down dramatically to offset that for somebody to want to step into those shoes and take over those premiums. I can't pass them to the tenants. The tenants have their own insurance issues to deal with. So it's when that fellow from Remax says as bad as he's ever seen it, I won't go that far locally, because the worst we ever had was during the oil bust in the 80s. That was brutal. That was absolutely brutal. This is awful, but not brutal. I do think it's going to tend to balance out. I looked today and I went, wow, this is kind of a telling thing. And you know, there have been 124 new listings that came into the MLS in the last 24 hours. But there's been 105 price decreases in the last 24 hours. That's kind of a dramatic change. So we're seeing listings coming on the market, but the existing listings changing their pricing, cutting it down a little bit. That's a bit unusual. Still selling homes, but certainly we're seeing some price reductions to attract some buyers.
Yeah, we have a piece of property, the family, that's been for sale, I think, north of 18 months now. One ridiculous offer. You know, it's a piece of property in great shape. I mean, it's amazing what's going on. But I think also there's some angst and anxiety. There was another Wall Street Journal article that was posted about the cost of owning a home is skyrocketing. Separate and apart from the home itself, maintenance of the home, because CPI's gone up, the services and the products necessary to improve your home, to just do the day-to-day maintenance, that amount is going up. The average cost, they said, of maintenance of homes now is somewhere around $6,600 a year. That's over and above increase in insurance, as you know well about that, flood insurance. And then you add to that the rising property taxes and utility rates. There's nothing on the downside on this balance sheet. It's all on the uptick.
No, it was such a positive conversation here, Newell, but you're right.
Yep.
You know, those kind of numbers were never factored into the underwriting when they did their qualifying ratios for a loan. So those lenders are now having to go back and go, wait a minute, the cost to repaint something is a lot more than what it would have been before. A new roof is going to be a lot more than before. So what do you have in reserves to cover these things? So, we're certainly going to see, I think, some pressure on sales prices. People need shelter, though. That's not going to go away. And I do see people still buying homes, but they're not going to buy as big a house as maybe they could have when interest rates were 2 or 3%. And insurance rates were maybe, 1% of the premium of the value of the house each year. That's kind of going away. On the rental side, absolutely, I'm seeing many more renters. First-time home buyers are down about 17% from what we would normally expect. Normally 32 to 33%. It's down about 21, 22%. So they're moving into rentals or moving in with parents or just, sharing spaces with somebody else. Simply because of the affordability aspect of it, the upfront cost and the continuing cost of owning a home today.
Yeah, I mean, it really creates pause, right? And you reflect upon, okay, how many dollars are leaving me that I don't really get an immediate return on? I mean, I get the sense of the greater good of property taxes, all of this, all of the infrastructure. But you don't feel it, right? Sometimes.
Well, you're right. When you pay those insurance premiums every year and you don't have a claim, that money's gone. It's not like they put it in a savings bank for you for next year. It's gone. Property taxes, that's gone this year. There's a whole new set of taxes the following year. So those are continuing ongoing expenses that folks are just frankly having to deal with. But we've always had to deal with them. It's just the inflationary effect on these expenses is what's really causing the pain. The salaries just have not kept pace with these expenses. That's the underlying problem. There's just been a lot of funny money, introduced into the economy from the government, and it's run up people had a lot of money to play with, and they did run up the prices, and now we're going to see some of that start to come back to bite us.
Arthur, let's talk about commercial property for a moment. We're hearing nightmarish stories, whether it's in San Francisco, Chicago, St. Louis, Baltimore. Downtowns are dying. I think we have some things that work in our favor, being a tourism and hospitality industry city. But where do you see this commercial property issue unfolding here in New Orleans?
Well, in the suburbs, it's doing fine. I mean, the North Shore is, if they're not at 100% office occupancy, they're darn close to it. That's not a problem. We're all seeing that migration from the Central Business District, from Orleans, and it's not because it isn't a great place to live and work and everything else. It's an issue of safety. There's a perception that it's dangerous if you work downtown. Whether it's reality or not, that's the perception. And it's a serious issue. One of the buildings downtown is about 50% occupancy, sold it at a price I never thought. You couldn't even come close to building four of the 20 stories at that price. It was crazy. So clearly.
Do you see more? Do you see more of that?
Yeah, it's pretty significant.
More that like that going to happen? I mean, we were talking about the DXC technology building. I think it sold for $18 million. I don't know that you could build a parking garage in two or three floors for that amount of money. That was half a million square feet, about 535,000 square feet, if my memory serves me correct, and a lot of parking.
Well, if you go back and look, I just remember this kind of funny story. The Plaza Towers, if you remember, 28 stories or whatever the stories it was, with all the problems it had with mold and things like that, it sold for $1 million years ago. And we had an appraisal firm who did an appraisal on it, and they appraised it for $1. $1. And they said the cost to mitigate it and tear it down and remove it, it was worth nothing.
But they greater than the value of the land.
It was exactly. The land didn't even cover the cost of it. So it was that's why it's still sitting there today. It's just not cost effective for somebody to just tear the sucker down. So unless government does it, And then, you know, pass that on to taxpayers. That's going to sit there for a while. I don't see a way to make those numbers work, certainly not today's economy.
So do we find ourselves where we would be better suited if we took about a half a million to three quarters of a million square feet of office space off the market somehow? And would that help?
Well, I think that's kind of happening already. It has been happening. A lot of these office buildings have been slowly converted to hotels over time over the past few years. And that has taken a pretty significant amount of what you call B and C space off the market. And that's a good thing. It's helped to keep the occupancy rates in some of the A buildings and some of the other B buildings. But still, you know, we're still vulnerable to tourism, and the perception of crime is still a very significant issue, even on the hospitality industry. I mean, that, if I had to pick one thing that has to get fixed, it has to be our perception of crime. And we're not the only city. I mean, you go to San Francisco. No. You, I mean, it's an urban problem in every major city. The homeless, it was a sad thing for a lot of the folks from Arello and other state brokers when they were coming down off the interstate, and they're going past all these homeless people in tents and just trash mounds up. I mean, that's not the image you want hospitality folks coming to the convention center to see. It's just not inviting.
I say this all the time. Human nature is the first impression is the lasting impression. And when they come off that interstate and that's what they land in, that's what they're going to talk about the rest of their visit and when they leave. And I don't know why we cannot figure that out.
No, when I used to teach agents that when they were going out to get listings, I said the first thing you do is you tell that owner to paint his front door. If they see that paint door is worn and beat up, they figure the rest of the house is just as bad. And so that's your front door. That's what they are going to look. They're going to keep driving past the house if that thing looks rotten from the front, no matter what you've done on the inside. So, we have to, our first impression has to be a good one.
Absolutely. Pretty ourselves up. Arthur Sturbkow, thank you so much for joining us. Local real estate analyst. Always enjoy the conversation with you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Neil. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.